Okay, ready when you are.
Okay, I'm in the back room of the St. Mary's Church with Steve Dinsdale.
Hi.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Nice show tonight.
Yes, we really enjoyed ourselves. It's such a magnificent surroundings, and we've tried a couple of different things tonight. First set we actually played with no sequences. We actually tried to make it atmospheric. And it was a gatherings first in that the church organ, there was the church organist that plays here actually began the set. So we actually made a transition between his organ playing, and we actually joined in over his organ playing. And so that was a first.
Do you know what he was playing?
He was playing some fugues, and then he said he was going to modulate in D major 7th and G major 7th. So I said, well, if you can hit C minor, we'll join in. And that's what we did. Very wanted him to play for a little bit longer, but he was killed. You know, he didn't... I can't remember what his reason was now, but it was nice, you know.
It was a nice transition. It could have lasted longer, but...
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But yeah, it was lovely. What a lovely bloke, and he sat for the whole set and was very complimentary about it. So that's, yeah, terrific. Fantastically positive.
When you guys started out, how did you get the name Radio Massacre International?
It's a very unusual name, admittedly. It's one of those things that just came to me out of the blue, literally. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a bunch of words, really. And it was just basically to do with some tapes that we made 20 years ago that were just a big racket, basically. And I thought, oh, a good name for this would be Radio Massacre International. And then we adopted it as the name of the band. And it's quite enigmatic. And in the days of the internet, it's like it's reassuring to know that there'll never be another band with a name remotely similar.
So this is your second time in the States. Is this the only concert on this trip?
This time it is, yeah. Yeah. Last time we played at Prog West on the West Coast. But we figure it's worth doing the trip to come here, because it's a good long concert. You get a whole evening to yourself to demonstrate everything that you can do, and then you get the bonus of playing another session on the radio as well. So it's you know, it's worth it.
The bonus, you know, Chuck's a slave driver, cracks that really well.
Even on your days off, he's a slave driver, I'll tell you. He has us marching around Philadelphia like there's no tomorrow. We get home to the hotel and we're like, knackered. But yeah, it's great. No, he's been a great host, Chuck, and we just love getting to really know Philadelphia. It's marvellous. Lovely, yeah. Lovely place. I mean, for us, it's a privilege just to be, for our music to be able to get us to places like this. It's just fantastic. And to hear the comments from people, you know, that are so grateful. It's just, it's very, very positive.
Yeah, there was some lovely reactions from the crowd tonight.
Yeah. The first piece in the second set, it was like, wow. And I think, in a way, our tactic of not using the sequences in the first set actually paid off. It's kind of, people have said, right, yeah, they've got down to business now, you know. Like, yes, this is what we came to hear.
Yeah.
So we teased them a little bit, you know, in the first set, but we thought, we like to change things around for ourselves, you know. Again, it was completely unplanned. We had no idea what we were going to do tonight. So,
well, how much of your show is improvised, and how much is prepared in advance?
Tonight, 100% improvised. We've experimented with different combinations over the years, and we just keep changing the goalposts depending on how we feel. And really, you know, we just, each concert we treat as a separate project, and, you know, we say we'll wing it this time, you know. We had very little preparation for it. Really, the preparation was of a technical nature. We didn't actually have any musical preparation, because we're all, you know, quite heavily time committed with families and jobs as well, you know, so. It's, tonight was 100% improvised, 100%, you know, we're very, very surprised. We're surprised ourselves, really, you know, in terms of when it goes well, you know.
It's always a surprise.
Yeah, it is. And it means that we get new music out of it as well, you know. It's a kind of continuum where...
And it's not the same stuff rehashed over and over again. Somehow you manage to create something new.
Yeah.
And with improvisation, you know, there's the danger of falling back on the on your stock licks that your fingers like to find all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of that, to be fair. Sometimes. I mean, in every improvisational situation, you have a sort of periods of extreme inspiration where the music kind of seems to be happening outside of you in some way. But you have other times where you're thinking, oh, my God, you know, where are we going to go next? And this is, you know, not working. And, you know, you go through, a lot of things go through your mind as you're making the music.
And, Gary, you can join us if you'd like.
Yeah.
You can tell us about the guitar you picked up.
Yeah, I got...
a few hours ago, in fact.
Yeah, I got it this morning from a store in Philly. It's a lap steel, Kalamazoo, I think from the 30s. So I've never played one before, but I thought I'd have a go tonight. So it seemed to make some reasonable sounds with it.
Good, good.
We like to throw these things into the pot, you know, and just kind of put, you know, put ourselves in a dangerous situation.
Brave man. How did you think it went?
The gig overall or the lap steel?
Both.
I think the lap steel was pretty cool, actually. I think that's, you know, that seemed to make some nice sounds, so... yeah, I'll have to work with that a little bit more, I think. The gig seemed to go down, you know, pretty well, and got a great response. So that's really makes it all worthwhile when you hear the response of the audiences. And actually, the audiences in the US do tend to be really appreciative. It's great to play in front of US audiences.
How does the Gatherings audience differ from, say, Prague West audience?
Not a great deal, actually.
No, they were pretty enthusiastic as well.
The Prog West audience was largely there to... there was an element of RMI support, in and they were very vocal. I mean, I was mentioning album titles and getting sort of, woo, you know, I've got that one kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, I think America generally... I think the Gatherings is a faithful kind of congregation, and that it does keep coming back. And it's just, you know, it's a very supportive kind of group of people that, you know, the concerts can't exist without the audience, and it's... It's very heartwarming to know that, you know, that people are interested enough to spend a Saturday night in a city like Philadelphia where there's a lot of options for entertainment, you know. So, yeah, you know, but the big difference between American and European audiences, though. European audiences are a lot quieter, a lot sort of harder. They tend to come to the event, experience the event, but you don't get that kind of participation from them so much, you know, that sort of...
A lot conservative, aren't they?
Yeah, they just kind of...
They express themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of, they like, you know, they're sort of, yeah, they're gathering the experience of being there, but they're not necessarily overreacting to it. But I think, I mean, what I liked about the fact was that, you know, the first piece in the second set, it was good. And it got that reaction, you know, I was astonished when I heard it, though, I must admit.
Now you officially released three CDs tonight.
Mm.
Tell me about those.
For the first time anywhere in the world. A lot of our recording in recent years has come about largely through live appearances. Because for some reason we seem to be in a bit of a purple patch at the moment regarding our live opportunities. We've actually played on three different continents, I guess. Played in Finland, we've played in Europe, England and America in 2004, which is pretty good for us. So we've got a stockpile of good live recordings. We normally use a multi-track to record everything live. So obviously recording live in front of an audience gives you that kind of extra edge to the recordings. Gives you that extra edge to the recordings. And so, yeah, we've put out three live albums. The first one recorded in 2003 in England at the National Space Centre in Leicester, which is a new venue. The second one recorded at eLive in Holland. We headlined eLive in Holland in September 2003. And then the most recent recording being a set that we made at Finland in January 2004, which was a small arts festival. And all of the three sets are entirely different because they were largely improvised. The eLive set was a little bit structured with recognisable motifs or whatever, you know, structures, but... The Finland gigs and the Leicester gigs were completely improvised. So it's our way of currently of generating new music. We never seem to get time to get near a studio.
They're all strong sets as well, and I suppose if we thought about just putting one out, the thing is, you know, there were three very good sets there, and in the end we just thought, well, hang it, let's just put them all out.
That's it. Put them all out. Make the music available to people. You know, maybe they can see a bit more where we're at now. You know, because we have. You know, we do incorporate drum kit into the music as well on certain occasions.
That's what we have to do, is get a drum kit for you next time.
Yeah. Yeah, we keep teasing Chuck about that. You know, it's get, you know, he gets frightened when we say we're going to use the drums in the church. So we don't.
Okay, well, thanks for talking with me, and thanks
pleasure.
For coming to America.
It's been a great pleasure, yeah.
Yep, it's great to be on the show.
Yeah,
it is.
We're missing one.
Yeah, unfortunately, Duncan gets burdened with the technical responsibilities because he's the only guy that understands how it all works.
Right.
Which has its advantages for me. But then Duncan's the leader, you know, doesn't necessarily like doing interviews that much, so, you know.
Oh, is Duncan the one who helped Terry Ferber understand the Mac, the
yes.
sequence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Duncan's Mr. Technical. Nothing in the band could happen without Duncan, that's the truth. Mm. So, yeah, it's great.
So there's a division of labour.
Yeah. Very much. I mean, we work well as a band in that respect. We all have our areas of sort of specialism that sort of fit together, dovetail quite well, really.
Does that cover hold true for the musicianship also, not just the technical aspects? Do you have... Well, obviously, there's a break... You're the guitar player, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of obvious. But we have two synth players in the band.
Mm.
Is there any thing that one does a little bit better than the other, and so they... hold
yeah.
up their end on something?
Yeah, I mean, both of our individual temperaments come out in the music. Duncan's more technical and scientific, and I'm more sort of romantic and sort of stupid, really. Not stupid, you know.
Okay,
I like melody. I like kind of, you know, it works well. I mean, in a way, the music, it is about expressing your feelings and your emotions to some extent. It's an outlet for that creative thought. So it really, it's the band is the sum total of it, you know, everybody's sort of contribution. Although the music is greater than the sum of the parts. You know, when it's working well, it's good in that respect. But yeah, we've always prided ourselves on being a very independent unit because we do everything ourselves. We edit the CDs, we put the artwork together, we control everything.
Northern Echoes is your own label.
It is, that's right. We have our own record label. And it's easy, you know, I mean, it's just easy.
You used to be on Centaur.
Yes, we did, yeah. Centaur gave us a good start in the field of sort of selling the music, because we were making the music for a couple of years before we even sort of approached anybody. And Centaur, obviously being one of the major mail order companies, really gave us a good start. But we just thought, really, we need to take control of everything, because we just, you know, mm-hmm. that's the way we are, really. It's our baby, so we need to make it work sort of economically for us as well, if we can. And the best way to do that is to cut out every middleman that you can think of.
Gary, as the lone guitar player of the band, how do you fit the guitar in with everything?
I have to use my ears a lot, basically. Wait for the right space to come along, be bold enough not to play. You know, that's really all it's about. I found it quite straightforward. Again, because we've been playing together for so many years. And remember, we've been playing since we were 16 or 17.
About 25 years.
In a variety of different types of band. So we just understand each other, and it's not difficult. It's you know, there's a lot of empathy between us. It's straightforward, really.
Mm-hmm. Sort of the less is more approach. Give everyone a space.
Sometimes more is more.
Sometimes it's more is too much.
It's just knowing when to do it and when to hold back. I think anyone who works in an improvisational band, you know, you've got to, if you're going to be any good at it, you've got to really, you know, listen to what everyone else is doing. And if you just fiddle your way all the way through it and, you know, yourself, listen to yourself, it's not going to work.
It's collective improvisation rather than free improvisation, I think. It's, you know, it's designed to serve a greater whole, you know, rather than just everybody kind of jazzing away in their own.
Yeah, I like that that expression when you said collective improvisation.
Yeah, mm. yeah, because yeah. we were talking. We actually did a fantastic gig over in England in March with Damo Suzuki, the singer from Cannes, and we played as a three-piece guitar, bass and drums. But we were discussing improvisation with him, obviously, you know, as one of the great improvisers and certainly an astonishing vocal improviser. And he was saying that, you know, I mean, he refers to it as instant composing, because his idea of improvisation is people kind of noodling away in their own kind of, you know, sort of sphere. But that we're very much in this sort of, you know, the kind of composing, not composing music exactly, but actually contributing to something rather than expressing ourselves individually too much, I think. You know, there's some interesting. It's a fascinating. Improvised music is a fascinating thing.
The other big secret is to eat plenty of bananas. It just gives you the energy to keep going.
It does.
It's the vitamin K.
Yeah. Quick hit as well.
Yes, this commercial was brought to you by the Banana Marketing Board.
Okay. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll see you. We'll see you again. You know, in the States, hopefully.
Yeah.
We like coming here.